Hi, this is Sydney, an undergraduate who's currently trying to learn more about polymers before going to graduate school for them. This week, I'd originally decided to give a brief introduction to polymer history, and more specifically, synthetic polymer history, or the history of making polymers. However, I quickly became quite bored of reading about only highly educated white men, and so I decided to focus my efforts on just studying one of them, Wallace Carruthers, someone really considered a father of polymer synthesis in the United States. He did his most prolific work for DuPont Chemical from 1928 through 1937. However, before we get started on really deep diving into what he did for polymer research, I want to set the scene of Carruthers' early life, DuPont Chemical, and finally polymer research and the knowledge that led into his discoveries. Wallace Carruthers was born April 27, 1986, in Burlington, Iowa, into a family from fairly modest means. His father, Ira, became a professor at Capital City Commercial College when Wallace was young, and the family then moved to Des Moines, Iowa, where his family would stay all throughout his life. As a child, Carruthers found joy in reading and tinkering with batteries and coils, and in high school, he seems to have found his first interest in chemistry through a few popular books of the time written by Robert Kennedy Duncan. These books were The New Knowledge, a popular account of the new physics and the new chemistry in the relation to the new theory of matter, and The Chemistry of Commerce, a simple interpretation of some new chemistry in its relation to modern industry. Although these books had a lot of information about modern science breakthroughs, they are also considered critical of pure science and focused on how science could be applied to make the current world a better place. So, as a quick introduction and tangent on what pure science is, because prior to going to college and majoring in chemistry, I'd never really heard of this pure science versus applied science debate. Pure science is work focused on understanding the fundamental phenomena that control our world. This work is aimed at explaining the universe and might eventually be applicable to certain technology, but the research is really done without a specific aim to make something better, just aiming to understand the world more. Applied science, on the other hand, is research done with a specific goal or purpose in mind. It is done with the thought or process to make a product better in some way. So when I first became familiar with this debate, I thought obviously applied science research would be better because it is immediately trying to make something we know of better. However, over my short time as a scientist, I've come to realize so many scientific discoveries we cherish and use today were not actually that directly applicable in their time. And while I'm personally more drawn to applicable science type research, I acknowledge and respect people who choose to work and focus on pure science or math research, because I know their discoveries could be vastly impactful to future generations in ways that we just don't understand right now. So, although these books Carruthers read and inspired him focused more on applied science and were critical of pure science, I did want to clear up that pure science is not necessarily wrong in any way, or not necessarily lesser than applied science. So, back to Carruthers' life. After graduating from high school, he attended the college his father taught at for 1 year before switching to Tarkio College. So, back to Carruthers' life. After graduating from high school, he attended college where his father worked for 1 year before switching to Tarkio College. At this college, Carruthers found arguably his first chemistry mentor, a professor named Arthur Pardee. Pardee encouraged Carruthers to dive into the world of chemistry, and with this encouragement, he really excelled in their program and eventually started teaching classes in chemistry at the college before he even graduated. From there, he then went to the University of Illinois for a master's degree with a focus on organic chemistry. For anyone who does not know what organic chemistry is outside the context of medical students hating the class, it's a branch of chemistry focusing on properties, reactions, and synthesis or creation of carbon-containing compounds. Coincidentally, carbon is in a lot of different stuff, so organic chemistry can cover a whole lot of different chemistry concepts. After completing his master's, Carruthers then took a year working at the University of South Dakota before returning to Illinois to complete a chemistry PhD with a focus on strictly organic chemistry synthesis reactions. Even at this time, people could tell Carruthers was a really extraordinary chemist, and this quality led to him immediately being hired to work at the University of Illinois after completing the PhD program. From there, he moved to Harvard as an instructor, and one thing that seems to have been clear after Carruthers taught for a while is that he was simply not a very skilled lecturer, and his main talent in chemistry was in research. This balance of skills made him primed to move away from academia and into research, and when DuPont started hiring people for their new fundamental research program, Carruthers' work was then sought out. As some background on DuPont, it is an American company originally founded in 1802 as a gunpowder mill, and this experience with explosives and chemical reactions to create them eventually led them to expanding their work to cover many different types of chemistry and chemical industry needs. Although they did have some research facilities before Carruthers' work, in 1927, the company made a big move to establish the Fundamental Research Program, which focused less on direct applicability of the research they were doing, and more on long-term research in some basic areas of science DuPont felt could be beneficial to the company in the future. These areas were organic chemistry, colloid chemistry, physical chemistry, and physics. Interestingly, polymers at the time were considered very much in the realm of colloid chemistry and less in organic chemistry, which they are now really associated with. For some context, a colloid is a mixture in which one substance is microscopically dispersed in another, but these mixtures never phase separate like oil and water do. Milk is a really common colloid mixture, for instance. A lot of early polymer research was done by colloid chemists due to a lot of polymers' unique colloidal properties in solution. Up to Carruthers' work, there had really already been a lot of research done in polymers that was slowly coming to explain their properties and what a polymer was. Through the 1800s, a lot of work had been done studying the natural properties of polymers, like properties of cellulose or rubber, and work had even been done in chemically altering these polymers to create new materials. For instance, vulcanization of rubber had already been discovered and then implemented into industry by this point. However, there were still many differences between our modern understanding and perspective on polymers and the world of polymers Carruthers came into. Most of the work previously being done was in modifying polymers that had already been created and studying the properties. And not many people were really trying to explain how the synthesis of polymers worked. Carruthers took a different approach to creating polymers using known organic chemistry reactions. He chose to focus on condensation reactions, or reactions that form water as a byproduct. And his idea was that instead of just having a molecule that reacted at one end, he would put reactive parts at both ends of the molecule. And then by continuously reacting these molecules with more molecules that reacted at both ends, these reactions would eventually form a chain of repeating units. And these reactions we now call bifunctional condensations, or condensation reactions that happen at both ends of a molecule, so bi. Initial studies in this work were successful, but only worked to synthesize molecules with molecular weights up to around 4,000. And for anyone that doesn't quite remember high school chemistry, molecular weight is how many grams a molecule weighs in a mole, and a mole is just an arbitrary measure of stuff that's really common in chemistry. So these polymer reactions and polymers proved that his concept of bifunctional condensation was workable, but I mean, the properties of them were not altogether that interesting. So he was able to publish many groundbreaking papers summarizing polymerization, the process of making polymers, and advocating for a macromolecular theory of polymers, citing his work and others to prove the point that polymers were really made of chains of many molecules. At the time, though, there was also this prevailing theory that said no molecule could have a molecular weight above 5,000, and Carothers was just determined to beat that number, provably, with his chemistry work. The major breakthrough towards beating this 5,000 molecular weight cutoff came in the introduction of a molecular still. A still will siphon off water from pretty much anything in it, and because Carothers' work was on condensation reactions that formed water as a byproduct, the ability to siphon water off as it formed kept the reaction progressing to form products. This is an example of Le Chatelier's principle, but essentially the way to describe it is that if you remove product as it forms, the reaction will keep working to make more product. And if you don't remove product as it forms, like the previous reactions Carothers was doing, eventually product will just stop forming, even if reagents were still there to make it. And with the introduction of the still into Carothers' bifunctional condensations, the molecular weights of his polymers immediately increased to over 5,000 and towards 10,000. So another important innovation of the Carothers group was that they noticed this ability to draw out polymers they had synthesized from solution and form fibers in a process called cold drawing. While this fact was not super interesting on shorter polymers or polymers below 5,000 molecular weight, it was intriguing that synthetic polymers could be drawn and made into fibers, and once Carothers and his group synthesized larger polymers with the use of a molecular still, they drew these polymers out into fibers again and found that the fibers possessed a lot of properties that could make them work in clothing manufacturing. So after this discovery of both having polymers over 10,000, but also being able to draw those polymers into fibers, their research group became focused on creating a polymer system that had cheap reagents and specific melting points to make them ideal for clothing manufacturing. So with all of this work, it took them many years of testing to find the appropriate reagents and the appropriate polymer system, but eventually their work directly led into the creation of what we now know as nylon. So, nylon came from this work in bifunctional condensation, but Carothers and his group also pioneered leading research into the creation of neoprene. Neoprene is created through an addition reaction, not a condensation reaction. In these types of polymer creation reactions, no water byproduct is formed, and it is simply just sticking one molecule to another to form the macromolecule. You could think of this as like making a Lego stack. One Lego just clicks into another until you want to stop and you want to finish creating your Lego stack. So Carothers himself was not as interested in this research and work, saying the scientific results were abundant in quantity, but perhaps a little disappointing in quality. From 1928 through 1937, Carothers contributed immensely to the field of polymer science, specifically in our understanding of polymer synthesis, and brought polymer science and innovation into America and into industry as well. His work and his group's work directly created polymer materials we still use today, and his impact on the field of polymers cannot really be understated. There are so many polymer scientists that continued his work in innovation, and together they all made the U.S. a polymer research hub in the world. However, unfortunately, Carothers' work was cut off in 1937 as Wallace Carothers committed suicide after fighting a seemingly lifelong battle with depression. It's really hard to say what more Carothers could or would have done if he had lived longer. but everyone in the scientific community can learn from his research and work, and there's no doubt he earns the titles and recognition as a giant in polymer chemistry he now gets. So to close off this episode, I quickly wanted to mention some concepts and ideas I think are really important to point out. Number one, mental illness and mental health in science has long been swept under the rug and pushed aside in favor of working long hours for that groundbreaking discovery. I just hope the scientific community can continue making positive and beneficial strides towards mental health awareness, so hopefully future scientists don't have to battle depression and lose that battle like Carruthers did. Another important thing to mention is no science work is really being done alone. So while Wallace Carruthers led much of this work at DuPont, there were so many other scientists in his group contributing and doing the research that made him and the work even better. Science is not a one person doing it all in a bubble. It is always a team and people working together to make the most important discoveries. Anyways, thank you for coming and hearing me discuss Wallace Carruthers and his contributions to the field of polymer chemistry. Next week, I will be discussing something. Who really knows yet? Also, friendly reminder, I'm no way in a professional, just trying to share some cool information. So I hope until next week, you all have a fantastic week. Thanks.